Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Good afternoon. I'm Barbara Bree, the founder of Run Women Run. On behalf of Run Women Run and the UCSD chapter of Vox, Voices for Planned Parenthood, I'd like to welcome you to The Landscape, California Women in Public Office, the history, the real dirt, the practicalities, and the successes. Over the next hour, we're going to talk with five amazing San Diego women who have been pioneers in seeking both elected and appointed positions in government. I'd like to welcome our guests. Dede Alpert served in the California legislature in both the Assembly and the State Senate from 1991 to 2004, and she chaired the powerful Senate Appropriations Committee and the Joint Committee on the Master Plan for Education. Prior to running for the legislature, Dede served on the Solana Beach School Board for 7 years. Currently, Dede is special advisor to the law firm of Nielsen, Merksamer, Perinello, Mueller, and Naylor, LLP. Midge Costanza. Midge Costanza is the first woman to be appointed assistant to the president, and Jimmy Carter was the smart man who made the appointment. Midge has spent over 40 years in professional and public life, and she is one of the most recognized and often controversial women in America. She has been involved in numerous political campaigns, including co-managing Robert Kennedy's successful U.S. Senate campaign in upstate New York. Currently, Midge is the public information officer for San Diego County District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis. In 1992, Lynn Shank was the first woman from San Diego to be elected to Congress. She has also held numerous senior appointed positions in state government. From 1978 to 83, she was California Secretary of Business, Transportation, and Housing in the cabinet of Governor Jerry Brown, and she was the first woman to hold this post. She also served as Chief of Staff to Governor Gray Davis from 1999 to 2003. Currently, Lynn is an attorney and corporate advisor and serves on the board of Sempra, Biogen IDEC, and the California High Speed Rail Authority. Mary Salas was elected to represent the 79th California State Assembly District in 2006 and was reelected in 2008. The district includes the cities of Chula Vista, National City, Imperial Beach, Coronado, and part of San Diego. She has announced that she will run for the state Senate in 2010. In the Assembly, Mary serves as chair of the Committee on Veterans Affairs and three other committees. In 1996, she was the first Latina elected to the Chula Vista City Council. Crystal Crawford is currently serving her third term as the mayor of Del Mar. She was first elected to the Del Mar City Council in 1998 after having served on the Del Mar Design Review Board for 4 years. In the last 10 years, she has served on many local and regional boards and committees, such as SANDAG. In her professional life outside of politics, she is the general counsel to Molesoft LLC, a privately held biotech company in La Jolla. Mary. Now, you got married when you were 19 years old, and you spent many years as a stay-at-home mom with a few part-time jobs. How did you get interested in politics?
Well, it was a long journey, and actually, I was helped along by several of the women that are on this panel here today that I met along the way. But at the age of 37, I decided that I need to return to college to complete my education. And so I was a freshman at the age of 37. So I had, you know, some extra challenges I had to meet at that time. And on top of that, I was raising two teenage daughters at the time. But what really got me involved and interested is that I was a social work major, and I started doing a practicum in an adoption agency. Mm-hmm. And when I saw all the problems that were happening with the young girls that were involved in having their children taken away from them, I saw that it was a lack of opportunity, a lack of education and support for them. And so that led me to get involved in a new organization that had been formed in San Diego County, which was MANA, a National Latina Organization. And it was a chapter of a National Latino Organization. And as a group, one of the missions that we had was to try to get more women elected into office, trying to get more women through to get their degrees. And so we were brainstorming one day, and we put together a conference. And during that conference, what we did is we identified all the different boards and commissions that were available in San Diego County, and we targeted different ones of our members, and we actually had a goal of getting them appointed to some of those positions. So I was one. But there were a lot of things happening at that time, too. By that time, I graduated from college, from SDSU. It was at the height of another recession, and so I was fortunate enough to get hired by the EDD, so I went to work for them, got that kind of experience, got selected to go on a training and development assignment with California Trade and Commerce Agency, where I met Lynn through that activity. In the meantime, through my work in MANA, got involved with the National Women's Political Caucus, and so met Midge through the National Women's Political Caucus. Went to a fundraiser, met Dee Dee Albert, who had just been elected to the Assembly at that time. It was her very first term.
So you can
term.
See it's a small world, and all the connections you're making today are very important.
Exactly. So I think that what it is it was just a lot of things happening at my life in one time, and looking at every experience that was happening to me, and somehow connecting with other women, connecting with other organizations. And so I did get appointed to a commission in the city of Chula Vista, then moved on to the Planning Commission. And then while I was on the Planning Commission, there was an opening on the city council. And so I put my hat in the ring, was not selected, but I learned a lot through that experience that being appointed to a city council is a very political thing as well. And so did not get that position. There was a second position that was open just a few months later, tried at that time, but had learned a little bit more by that time. Did not get appointed to that. So I decided, I'm going to run. And so what happened is that through all those different networks that I had gotten involved with and all the different women that I had met through those networks, we just pulled together a committee and a team. And I ran for city council, and it was a fantastic race because we actually did a real campaign. Bob Filner was my congressman at that time, and he did a class for us on how to run a campaign, and he put one of his staff members, Nora Vargas, did our Get Out the Vote. And I raised a lot of money, takes a lot of money, and we won against all odds because I wasn't the one that was supposed to be there, but it was through all of that that happened.
That's a great story. And I know, Midge, you have a great story about when you first ran for office in Rochester, New York in 1973. What was it like back then?
Well, it was interesting because there would not have been a panel where so many women who have run for public office would be sitting and addressing other women. I was so many firsts that that I wondered whether or not they were going to bronze me. Fortunately, they did. But it was really interesting. The ward system, the political ward system on the East Coast, they came to me and they said, listen, honey, we're going to, that's what they used to say then, we're going to let you run for the city council. Now, we know you can't win, but the women's movement is really on our tail. We have to run somebody. So will you do it? Oh, I said, I can't wait because The poll showed that I was a very highly recognized person in the community because I got involved. Like you, Mary, only at that time, that was the only way women got noticed, was getting involved in different organizations, whether they be religious or ethnic or whatever. There were no women's organizations to join. So I ran and I went house to house. What was so interesting, with the advent of the women's movement, I would go to the door and a husband would answer the door and say, "I'm going to vote for you, but don't tell my wife." Then she would come to the door, and he, of course, would say, "I think it's for you." And she would come to the door, and she'd say, "I'm going to vote for you, but don't tell my husband." So I knew I had something going. And so I won. And fortunately, and I've always felt that anything that has happened for me has been fortune, and not something I've planned, but with the help of all the people in Rochester, I was the highest vote getter in the history of anyone who had run for the city council. We have a city manager form of government, which means that the 9 members of the city council select the mayor and the vice mayor. Well, when they saw the number of votes that I attained, it scared the heck out of them. So they met at 4 o'clock in the morning, 8 men, and voted for one of their own to be mayor. So the way I found out was I got a phone call from a news station, and they said, "Are you aware that they selected Tom Ryan as the mayor and that you were not considered?" I said, "Oh, shock." they made me the vice mayor instead. And of course, luckily, I've had some experience in vice. And and so I became the vice mayor, and that was how I became the vice mayor of Rochester, New York.
Well, it was a great start to your political career. Now, Lynn, a few years after Midge became the vice mayor of Rochester, you were a senior official in Jerry Brown's cabinet from 1978 to 1983, actually, when we first met. And so please tell us, what was Sacramento like in those days for a senior woman in government?
Well, first of all, by then I had met Midge. Need I say more? We met at the White House and she trained me well. But Sacramento back then was a typical old boys club, quite literally. There was a restaurant called Posey's where the lobbyists, who were all men, would once a week meet with certain legislators, and they had a bowler hat, and this is before the Political Reform Act, etc., and they would pass this bowler hat around where the lobbyists at lunch would put cash in the bowler hat, and then at the end of lunch, or hand it to whoever was the guest of honor. I thought, well, I'd like to see how this works, and of course, it was, even though this was a restaurant open to the public, during that particular lunch hour, women were barred. But when I was appointed to the governor's cabinet, the agency had never had a woman, even as an undersecretary, much less as the cabinet secretary. And all of the business regulatory agencies reported to me. The Department of Transportation reported to me, the State Banking Department, and the California Highway Patrol. The commissioner of the Highway Patrol, a day after I was appointed, showed up in full uniform regalia, which he didn't ordinarily wear. He would wear civilian clothes. Showed up, even had a sword, and came into the office. it was his subtle way of letting me know, you know, who really was in charge. turned out after a few years, we actually became quite good friends. And when I ran for office, he supported me. But it was a struggle every day. The CEOs of the major banks, corporations that had to come in to see me would come in and say things like, "Well, young lady." Now, I took it as an affront then, but today I wish somebody would come in and say, "Well, young lady," and proceed to tell me what was really going to happen. So I think the point of it was because the Jerry Brown administration was the first to bring in women at very high levels as department heads, as cabinet secretaries, appointees to the Supreme Court. Sometimes it went well, sometimes it didn't go so well. But it opened up a new era, a totally new era, and we felt, truly, you called us pioneers. We did feel like pioneers back then, but it was a lot of fun because we knew that with all of the frustrations that we were creating a new path forward for other women to follow.
And you truly did. Thank you. Now, Dee Dee, you served on the Solana Beach School Board for 7 years. Why did you decide to run for the state assembly, particularly in a district where you were told you had no chance of winning? And what was your strategy?
I think it was because I had no chance of winning that I ran. It was... I was a member of the school board, and I had lived, I guess, much like Mary is talking about, a pretty traditional life. I was a stay-at-home mom. I was a volunteer in the classroom. I was president of the PTA. I coached soccer. I was a Girl Scout leader. And when I ran for the Solana Beach School Board, it's a small school district, and it was, you know, the pay for running, for being on that board was $0. I spent $0 on my campaign because it was the kind of thing that parents in the community did. But I had gotten involved with politics and gotten involved with Lynn Schenck. I guess that maybe that was my my first trouble. And involved in a group that raised money for other candidates. And this particular assembly district was overwhelmingly Republican. I'm a Democrat. And it got to be close to filing time and there were no candidates. And so I said, you know what, I'll go ahead and run, and I'll pay my own filing fee. And they were absolutely delighted to find someone who was willing to do that. And I said, you know, the real reason, though, that I did it is I thought, you know, this will give me a chance to talk about education, because that was really my passion. And so I would be able to do that. So even if I didn't win, I would go to all of the debates and participate all along the way and talk about how important education was to the future of California. A lot of things fell in place, things that you could hardly expect. And I had, again, a lot of support from women who had run for office. By the time I did it, it was 1990. It really was a very different time. I was very fortunate in that respect because I really could build on the success that so many other women here in San Diego had provided.
Great. Thank you. Crystal, you've been involved in Del Mar City government since 1998. How do you think women govern differently?
Well, it's been a real pleasure to be involved in Del Mar, a city that is the smallest in the county and actually has a long tradition of having women in office. Many of our city councils, in fact, have been equal number of men or women, or at times there was 4 women and 1 man. So very different from what you might see in city councils in other cities in the county. It has been a real interesting journey for me, and I have been a member either as an alternate or as the primary on the San Diego Association of Governments for my entire time in office. And that board is, you have representatives from the 18 cities and the county, as well as ex officio representatives from various agencies. And so I have had a chance to observe men and women, mostly men, on the board and in various committees. And in my experience, I think women are informed, they're inquisitive, and they ask good questions. They try to make decisions based on the merits of the issues Which is not to suggest that our male counterparts don't also do that, but women oftentimes will ask questions that the men might not even think of, and you can see them weighing the pros and the cons and asking for information as opposed to just looking around the room to see what their friend from another city might be leaning towards doing. So I think women work harder. They do their homework. And they make their decisions based on values, not popularity. And I believe that's the way that we ought to be making decisions.
Any other thoughts from other panelists on this?
Oh, I absolutely agree with Crystal on the way women approach a meeting, for example. They're not afraid to ask a question that may sound stupid. It is the ego factor. You know, they're not... they want the information, they want to know, and they do work harder. I remember in my first year in Congress, I was at home studying, actually preparing for a committee hearing, and my chief of staff called me, and she said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm in my apartment." One is always intimidated by one's chief of staff. I'm in my apartment studying for the committee hearing tomorrow. She said, "Why aren't you at the XYZ Pool and Spa Society reception?" I said, "Because I've got this important committee hearing and I want to be prepared." And I said, "But that's where you're going to raise your money." And so the next time there was an event, it was the gym dinner. I thought Jim was somebody I should know. And I went with Karen Shepherd, who was a congresswoman from Utah, and we go in to this gym dinner, and it's the GYM dinner. And it was a fundraiser for the gym. And all of the men were there, and the former President Bush was there, the elder, and Al Gore was there. And Karen and I went in, and the wave of testosterone hit us in such a way, we sort of backed out. We said, "Let's go back and study for tomorrow's committee hearing."
That's great. Dee Dee, you have a thought.
You know, I think women tend to use power differently than men. I often found that men ran for office because they wanted to be powerful. Women ran for office because there was some issue that concerned them. The environment, education, some work they had done probably in their lives. And they thought, you know what, if I am in office, I'll have power to make change and to do things differently. And I think that's a very important difference that I at least have seen in elective office.
I think the other thing is that when women vote no on an issue, when a vote comes up, they feel compelled to give an alternative and to explain why they're voting no. Whereas men, I think, tend to just vote no and that's sufficient, because women feel that they have to find an alternative to the issue and the need.
And I would say that the difference that I saw, in particular when I was on the Chula Vista City Council, because you're working with a smaller body of people, is there's more consensus building. It's more of trying to seek a win-win solution and to make sure that everybody's, you know, viewpoints are included in the final decision-making.
That's true. Very different than when you get to Sacramento and many more people and much more partisan. Okay, so the next question, I'm going to ask Lynn first, but it's like I'm going to read a little bit of stuff. So men or women, who's the better leader? A recent study by the Pew Research Center found that Americans believe women have the right stuff to be political leaders. In fact, they rate women higher on honesty, intelligence, and some other traits that they value highly in leaders. Yet, only 6% of the 2,250 adults surveyed said women make better political leaders. 21% men make better leaders, and 69% said they're equal. So, Lynn, do you have an explanation for these results?
No.
No, okay.
I sort of only glance at polls of any kind, because if I had studied the polls, I never would have won anything. You know, that's it. But, you know, I do understand sort of what's behind that. I mean, people do think of women having these of attributes, if you will, more, let's say, more motherly, you know, person that you can trust. But it really always comes down to the individual. It comes down to the person who's running and who the opponent is. So polls that are general like that are sort of interesting, but for me, they're just that. They're just interesting. They aren't really a guideline.
You know, I think also that people tend to believe that men make better executives and women make better legislators. And maybe it's because of some of the qualities of being consensus builders that they see that that's an important quality in a legislative body. But somehow men, maybe the testosterone makes them appear to be stronger, and so they see them as strong leaders. I think that's changing. I think that was, again, a sort of a traditional thing because of, in many ways, the roles men and women had in society. Now, as you watch the accomplishments of so many women that I look at in this room, in every field imaginable, not just in one field or another, I think people are beginning to recognize that somebody like Hillary Clinton is just as qualified to be president as any man in America.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I would say that here in San Diego County, we have been really pioneers in sending a lot of women to the state legislature and then later on to Congress. We've, with the tradition of Dee Dee Albert and Susan Davis and Chris Kehoe and a number of people that have gone up to Sacramento, Denise DeCheney, and once in Sacramento have really built a very strong reputation of being very competent leaders up there. So at least in the San Diego water, we're doing well.
These women that you mention, I was able to observe them from the executive branch. They all worked so much harder than the men. They were just so much more diligent and so much better at getting the job done that they almost it seemed like it was a natural progression to become head of a committee, but boy, it takes an awful lot of work. And someone like Dee Dee, who had respect from both sides of the aisle, from men and women, I mean, that came from her diligence, her demeanor, and she earned it the hard way.
Well, this actually leads into a question about term limits. So you mentioned a lot of terrific women from San Diego who have been in the legislature or are currently in the legislature, and now we have term limits. And Dee Dee, how do you think term limits impacts women?
Well, you know, term limits were voted in 1990, and so in that sense for the and really began to take effect in 1994. And at that moment, they were wonderful for women, and they were wonderful for people of color in this state because it meant that men, white men who had served in the legislature for 30 years were termed out, and it gave opportunity to people. But just as it gave that original opportunity, it has now, of course, meant that those very same women are no longer there. And so I think that's what makes a group like this so important because in 1992, and Lynn and I had talked about this story before, in 1992 I was an assemblyman. My state senator was Lucy Calais, my congresswoman was Lynn Schenck, and my two United States senators were Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer. And everybody said, you know, the year of the woman, we're there. Well, we were there for that moment, but if you're not ever vigilant with term limits, you just have to keep bringing the talented women in and making sure that you replace yourself.
And we've seen that in the county, too. When I was first elected in 1998, there were quite a few more women in office in San Diego County. I happened to take part in a commission study in the late 90s that looked at the number of women in office throughout the state as well as in various counties. And at that time, we had, I believe, about 34% women in office in San Diego County. There are 99 elected officials in the cities and the county here. And at that time, we had quite a few women. But now that number's declined. And depending on the time frame that you look at, there were also more women in the involved in the state legislature. But the flow, we have the ebb and the flow. And with term limits, that certainly has affected the ability, how long people can stay in office. And it has opened the door for more people from local government, like Mary, to move up into the ranks, into the legislature. But we still don't have enough. I read somewhere recently that until you have about a third women in any particular body, you don't really attain the same kind of power and influence that the men have in that legislative body or city council or whatever the particular group is. And I've certainly seen that here when I, as I mentioned earlier, at SANDAG, at a regional agency, there aren't very many women on the board. And the number changes over time with the election cycles. But, you know, when I suggested a few years ago that as women, we might, the members of the board might get together often and share ideas and talk about the issues and support each other, some of the women on the board thought that was a great idea. But I actually had one shy away from that and really surprised me. She felt that it would be too political, that the men on the board might feel threatened by our getting together to talk about the issues. But that's exactly the kind of behavior that the men on the board engage in.
Sure, the old boys club.
Exactly.
Well, welcome to the old girls club. The young girls club, too.
But there's been a disconnect.
Okay.
And the disconnect, I mean, when you think of, there has never, ever been, except for Kathleen Brown, I think she's the only woman who's ever run for governor of the state of California.
You mean in a primary? Well, Dianne Feinstein did against
right.
Pete Wilson. Yeah.
And neither one won. And listen, look at the caliber of these women. Look at Dianne Feinstein today. Now, where was the disconnect? Because in this room is the power that creates us and our opportunities. Because in this room are the people who make this happen. And whether it's way back when I was a first or whether when you were first. And look, Lynn was a first in 1992. I was the first on the city council back in 1973. So what we're talking about here is the disconnect between the population of a community and the way they support women who run. And that's why when I saw all of you here today, that was the hope that I take from this room. This is the hope where Barbara, in a couple of years, you'll have another panel. And there'll be maybe 20 women up here talking about what it was like when they ran for public office. And this disconnect can make the difference between whether or not you have good government or mediocre government.
That's very interesting. And Midge, you know, I've looked at some of the data on women elected officials in California and in San Diego in particular. And where women seem to have the biggest roadblock is in the executive positions. Less trouble with, you know, the legislative, the assembly, city council, school board. But when it gets to the executive positions, it's where there seems to still be more of a glass ceiling.
Although we've had two women mayors in San Diego.
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
But Barbara, before we move off this topic, if we can think back to what it was like in the early 90s, we had National Women's Political Caucus that was really engaged in recruiting candidates and getting them trained for office. We had Emily's List that was more engaged here in San Diego County. My own organization, MANA, was a lot more political back in those days, and they've lost that focus. And so that's why when Run Women Run, when you started this organization, I thought, great, it's good that we get back to that, because what's happened is from the very the entry levels of boards and commissions, we've seen a decline of women applying for those. Mm-hmm. And I know at least when I was involved with MANA, we made sure that we kept up to date with the changes in those opportunities and actually plugged in women, wrote letters of support, got them engaged at that level so that they could move on.
So it's important. You have to start with the grassroots.
Absolutely.
And Barbara, if I could just, because Mary is absolutely right about that. And it's not just organizations. It's also individual women supporting other women. There was an opening on the San Diego Port Commission, and Abby Wolfsheimer was the city councilwoman, and she called me. And she said, I want to nominate you for the Port Commission. I said, well, Now, there are some people on the city council who aren't going to be supportive of that since I supported their opponents. And she said, we will work together. We will make this happen. And by God, she did it. She targeted a woman for that port commission. She targeted me. She helped me. And so it was that sort of interface between a woman who is in a position of power and one who is in the community. And we have to do that again. You're absolutely right. We have to start supporting one another again as women.
Great. And you've done a great job of that your whole life, Lynn. So thank you. So Mary and Crystal, you're both in elected office right now. And I'd like to have each of you tell us what your typical day is like so people get a sense of what it's like to be an elected official. And you're in very different kinds of positions. So Crystal first, what is your typical day like?
Well, of course, it varies. But I oftentimes will have a meeting of one sort or another at 8 o'clock in the morning, sometimes earlier. And then I'll try to go back to my day job at my office, which is actually pretty close to
here.
So
how much do you get paid for being the mayor of Del Mar?
Well, I get $350 a month. And that's before taxes, of course. And that extra $50 is because I'm mayor. The council member salary is $300 a month. We have no benefits, no health insurance or retirement or anything like that, no car allowance or those sorts of things, although some of the other cities do have much more generous packages. But I typically will start out with my several meetings in a day, first thing in the morning, lunch meetings, and an event in the evening, a city council meeting, which may go on until 11 o'clock at night, phone calls, numerous emails. You never know what a constituent might ask you to help them with. I was in the bank on Saturday morning to make a little deposit for work, and I ran into a constituent who's got a problem with a complaint about his RV parked in his driveway. So I asked him to send me the information because that's what I do, is I help local residents with whatever their problems are. And many times it's connecting them with people like issues that might come up. I might refer them to Midge for help from the district attorney's office if it's a senior citizen issue or identity theft or something like that. So much of what I do is connecting people with the right resource, either at our city hall or if it's a regional issue at Sandag, something like that.
But and you have a job, a real job that pays you a real salary.
I do.
Yeah, okay.
Yes,
in addition.
I do. But I've been very fortunate in that I've had the support of my neighbors, my family, my friends, but also of my employer. And I think that juggling many different tasks and aspects is of our lives is something that we all have in common. I'm sure everyone here in this room. And I don't have children. So that gave me a lot more freedom than other women might have who have young children or even teenagers. And but I am able to have a flexible schedule for my employer, who's always supported my community service and allowed me to come and go. And knowing that I'm going to get my job done, my work done, but then also recognizing that I have my responsibilities to the city. And that was a condition, frankly, of when I took the job. I said, I would love to come to work for you, but I'm in office, and my city council work is very important to me, my community, and it will have to come first. And it's worked out. I've been there now for 9 years, and I've been able to do both.
So, Mary, you're considered a full-time legislator. You're back and forth between San Diego and Sacramento. What is your typical day like when you're in Sacramento?
Well, and it's so busy. It's incredibly busy. And we're scheduled. My meetings are usually back-to-back, and they're usually scheduled in 15 minutes or half an hour increments, depending on the topic that has to be covered. So I have a variety of people that come into my office. Many of them are coming in to talk to me about legislation that's before us and the impact it will have to their particular community or industry or organization. So typically we get people talking about the pros and cons of what we're doing in the assembly. Then, of course, we have committee hearings, and I try to pick committees so that there were no time conflicts. As Dee Dee can tell you and Lynn can tell you, there are times when you cannot avoid your committees being the same time as another committee. So you're literally running back from committee room to committee room, hearing bills and taking a vote. So I'm prepped on the committee work. I go to committee hearings. There are functions that we attend outside of the Capitol on a daily basis. Just so many things packed into a day that you can't imagine.
And then you come back to San Diego on the weekends, exactly. And you get to sleep and go to the beach, right?
No, not at all. So the schedule is this. I usually fly into Sacramento on Sunday evenings, and then I fly back home on Thursday afternoons. And then typically on Thursday afternoons or in the evenings, I have local events. I may have a town hall meeting, or I may be invited to another community event that's going on. Then on Fridays, I have back-to-back meetings with constituents in my district that want to talk to you about things that are going on, budget cuts and what they mean to their particular services. We have school superintendents coming in. We have school board trustees coming in. By the way, Pearl was not recognized. Pearl Quinones, that sits on the Sweetwater Union High School District, is here too. But we have a variety of people that come in. And then on Sundays, usually I'm doing events in the community. We conduct health fairs, identity theft clinics. We've done town hall meetings on foreclosures. So just a variety of things.
So this sounds, you know, everybody wants to think, you know, there's such a thing as a work-life balance. And, you know, with running for office and then being in office, that obviously you have to make some trade-offs. Now, three of you, Lynn, Midge, and Crystal, you don't have children. And Dee Dee and Mary, you waited to run for office until your children were older. How do you think women can run for office, an office where they have to travel to Sacramento or Washington, D.C., if they have young children? And if so, how?
Well, I think they can. But the thing is, this is something that you need to sit down and talk with your families about. I think it needs to be very, very clear, because it isn't easy. Julie Bornstein, who served with me in the Assembly and had two teenage boys when she was elected to the Assembly, told me that her husband was a stay-at-home husband. He worked out of the home, and she was an attorney, and it always worked outside of the house. But when she got to Sacramento, she said, all these people said to her, how can you leave those teenage boys at home? And she said, did anyone ever ask any of the men how they could leave their teenage boys at home? It's a very difficult job. I've seen people who actually move their families half the year to Sacramento and then move them back to their district. People who moved to Sacramento with all of their family and then just went down to the district for a day on the weekends. So it is something that, while you can do it, it is not easily managed and is not managed well at all unless everybody in your family actually understands what it's like and what it's going to do and how your family is going to have to operate.
Yeah, Barbara, I'd say, the notion of family, there's no one cookie-cutter answer to this. Many of my colleagues in the House did have young children, and everybody worked it out differently. Mary pointed out the busyness of the day, and it's absolutely true. When you're in elected office, whether it's the executive branch or the legislative branch, you are on the go from early morning to late at night. And to me, one of the biggest frustrations was the lack of thinking time, the lack of the ability to just sit down. And that's why I sort of liked my 9-hour commute each way, because on the plane I could think. But in terms of family, whether you have children or not, there is very little work-life balance. I'll never forget, I was on the House floor, and it was a contentious debate. I was cranky, and one of the House pages came and said, Congresswoman, there's a phone call for you, and you go into the cloakroom where there is a whole wall of old-fashioned telephone booths, and you go into the telephone booth, and I picked up the phone, and it was my husband. I said, what? And he said, hon, would you just go down in front of the C-SPAN camera and wave at me so I could see you? And so I burst into tears. but it really is that demanding. And if you want balance in your life, I would say that elective or even appointed office is really not the place to find it.
Well, if I could chime in on that, I think that, you know, part of what's made this work for me is that I am an energetic person. I like being busy. I like multitasking. So I think part of the challenge for women or even men who are thinking about running for office is to really be honest with yourself about what you like and what you dislike, and think about your strengths and your weaknesses, and do you enjoy that kind of busy day? Because personally, I do. I like the idea of having a lot of different things to do and issues to tackle during the day and people to talk to and new things to learn, but that's not for everybody. And likewise, if you're not comfortable with conflict, being asked to make decisions about issues that your spouse or your family or your neighbor might disagree with, then you're probably not going to like elected office.
And it does make a difference if you have to commute. Yeah. I think local office and Sacramento, Washington are quite different.
And you do have to have the support of your family and have them be happy with the decision that you're making to run as well. Because I certainly know that with dealing with my own family, you do miss a lot of the birthday parties. You miss your mom's birthdays or special days. And it gets pretty tough to do that. I know when we were on lockdown for 48 hours this last time around, it was my husband's birthday. Not only was it his birthday, but it was Valentine's Day. And so my children were sending me photos over my BlackBerry of all the fun that they were having at home with the party. But at least that made me feel a little connected to them while they were having fun, because life goes on for them when you're away. And then they're a tremendous amount of support and comfort to you when you come back into the district as well. So you just can't do it without having a good understanding with your family, that they know that these are the sacrifices that you have to make. And even your grandchildren, you know, one of my grandchildren told me, gosh, you're not a nana like my other nana is a nana, you know. but you know, she has two different kinds of nanas. But those are just the things that you have to sit down and talk to your family with and make sure that they're happy with it, because if they're not happy with it, you can't be happy doing the work that you're doing.
I think one of the first questions that you ask yourself before you even decide to run for elective office is to sit down with your family, because you're all running for that office. It's not just you. When you have a family, you sit down and you say, how would we want to be in the state assembly or the state senate? I think that three things have to be addressed. One, what is your purpose of running? What do you believe you can accomplish? And why you and not the other person? And three, your first support base is your family. And if you don't have them, then don't run, because that's the family decision, not just an individual one.
Great advice. Now, people often talk about the importance of having mentors, whether it's in business or public life. Crystal, have you had mentors, and either men or women? And if so, how have they helped you?
Well, yes, I've had mentors, and some of them are sitting right up here on this panel. And they've been men and women. I've been the only woman on my city council for my entire time there. So I'm in my 11th year now, and I've been very fortunate to have the support of my other council members that entire time, and their friendship and their advice. But I also, before I ever ran the first time, I was recruited by others in the community who had watched me as I was involved on the design review board, had, you know, thought I did a good job, that I was prepared and cordial and made good decisions and worked well with the community, and so they asked me to run. And so there was a group of supporters that stepped up to teach me how to run for office in Del Mar. I didn't know what it was like to run for office, even though I have had a long history of interest in politics and working for other candidates. But it was necessary to have that core group of supporters, that kitchen cabinet, if you will. And I still rely on those folks for advice, because there are times that come up when you really don't know, or I really haven't known, what I think about a particular issue, or obviously there are pros and cons, and you need that good advice to get you thinking about an issue in a different way. But I think my first mentor, if I go back and I think about who's the first person who really influenced me, who really taught me that I could do whatever I put my mind to doing, was my seventh grade teacher, Mrs. Parker, who was a wonderful woman, is a wonderful woman, and who encouraged me in a variety of ways to think that I was smart, capable, I could read and understand any book that I wanted to read. And so it's gone on from there. But I've needed mentors, and I've really benefited greatly.
Well, you know
what,
this has been an amazing conversation, and we're almost out of time. So I have a last question that I'd like each of you to answer. And we'll start with Dee Dee and move down the line. So Dee Dee, what is your advice to the next generation of women who want to run for office?
Well, I think the first I would say is they are very lucky, because now so many women have already made the journey and they can turn to those women for support and for help when they choose to run for office. I think Midge's advice about the first people you have to sit down with, you have to sit down with your family, because it really is something that your entire family does. And then I guess I would say probably nothing has been more rewarding in my life than the time I got to serve the public in the state legislature. The issues I got to be involved with, the people that I had the opportunity to meet, the things that I had the chance to do, really give wonderful, wonderful meaning to my life. So I hope that while we've told you some of the difficulties about running for office, remember that to provide public service, there just is no higher good, I think, than to be able to provide public service. So I just hope all of you will keep it in mind that even if you don't do it for all of your life, that for some time in your life, I hope you think about running and being in elective office.
Thank you. Midge, what's your advice to the next generation of women?
I think they'd better think about running for public office. I think that when this organization began, Barbara, Run Women Run is a message, not just the title of a group of people who had nothing else to do. The fact of the matter is, and those of you who know me well, government affects every single minute you live. Government is born from politics. Now, you cannot just talk to each other about how bad things are. You have to step up and you have to give some of yourself to make things better. And when you don't run as women, then somebody's going to run, and we can't keep getting together every 3 or 4 years saying, gee, we need more women to run for public office. Of course we do. And we need good men to run for public office. So the commitment that I would look for from all of you, you can get advice from all of us or any of us, but the commitment that I want from you is that you will start living your life, not just existing through it, and make your first choice public service, as Dee Dee has referred.
Lynn.
I hate following Midge, and they make me do it all the time. I'll try to be brief. One, believe in yourself. Believe that you have the power to make a difference. No matter what other people say, no matter how the opposition tries to divert or undermine you, believe in yourself. Second, get involved. Get involved in your community at any level, but get involved. You never know the difference you can make till you get involved and the next step it can take. And third, yes, family is the most important, but also make sure you stay connected to your friends, because they'll be there
for you after the lights are off, after the phone stops ringing, and after you're out of office. They're there for you as your support network. They're the ones who are going to tell you you've got lettuce in your teeth. They're going to be the ones that you can be yourself with. And so stay connected with your friends, because after family, they're the ones that are going to help you get to where you want to go.
Mary.
Well, it is a tremendous privilege to be elected to office because people are giving you their trust, your trust to do the right thing for them. And I just have to say that I've met so many women along the way that have said, you know, it's, oh, you can do it, and I'll support you in your work to do it. That's exactly the way that I felt before, but each and every one of you has a capacity to run for office, and we really need your leadership. Because in these days of term limits and time goes quickly, we need good people to follow behind us. And set your sights high and start, you know, incrementally. Make your networks of friends. Keep growing them. And just keep your eyes and your mind open to possibilities and think beyond what you think you're capable of doing. And I look forward to seeing very many of you out there. Step up to the plate and get on those boards and commissions, and then make the plunge and run for office. You can do it.
Thank you.
Well, I know we're just about out of time, and I think you've heard excellent advice from my colleagues. And I would just add that don't be afraid to make it work for you. And I think you've heard that from all of us, that everybody's lifestyle, our way of doing things, it's all different. But men don't ask themselves, can they do this? Are they good enough? Will it work? They just do it. It's just assumed. But I can attest to you that you can make it work for you if your heart's really in it. So get out there and run, women, run.
Well, I'd like to thank our great panel for joining us today. Dee Dee Alpert, Midge Costanza, Lynn Shank, Mary Salas, Crystal Crawford. I'm Barbara Bree with Run Women Run, and thank you for joining us today.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.